760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, welcome to the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a best-selling author. He's a philanthropist. He's a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families, all-around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing all right, Joe. Hey, did you drink too much coffee?
No.
I'm just wondering.
I always, I got to rush. We have a big show tonight.
Oh, you have to rush. Okay. I'm just curious.
Okay, I still drink coffee, but I tell you, I'm still off the wheat. And folks, if you got a rash or an allergy, I swear, I've done this for 3 weeks. Get off all wheat and gluten, and but just any crackers, breads, anything. Try that for a month, and I'm trying to avoid sugars too. I don't drink any soda, as you know, Richard. But
that's good. You shouldn't.
But
it's not good for you.
But my rash cleared up, so everyone, you should know.
I was going to say, it's too much information.
And my allergies are at bay. So I'm just throwing it out there for you and yourself too, Richard. You might want to check it out for a month.
I eat very little bread for an Italian.
Well, I just think everyone should just go off of the wheat for a month and see how you feel. So, hey, let's see, NCAA. remember last week I said, I've taken one of the Michigan teams, either one, and boy, they got...
Yeah, where'd you take them, Joe?
They were gone by the time I think I got off the air, and then, of course, everyone liked Florida.
UConn was unbelievable after trailing by 12. They just rolled over Florida.
Yeah, so that's not, maybe you kind of have to favor UConn at this point. Who knows? No one won the billion, right?
Nobody won the billion.
Anyway, I know we had a show a few weeks ago about the gentleman involving healthcare, and I just want everyone to know there are physicians out there that still want to try for a universal healthcare plan, and there's a group called the Drive for Universal Healthcare, and if you go to duh4all.org, there's information there about they're going to be showing a film called The Healthcare Movie based on the Canadian model, and that's going to be at UCSD's Price Center Ballroom B. But all the information is there, and that's going to be April 10th and 11th, I believe, 11 and 12, and that's a Saturday, Sunday, both I think about 3:30 in the afternoon. And then there's the Stars and Stripes Ball for the USO, sandiego.org. Go there. That's coming up in a few weeks, and I told Rena I would mention that as well because that's another good cause. But on the line, we have probably the most senior and one of the best journalists in town, bar none, and I think he does more good journalism from out of state than 90% of our journalists in state. And
all of our in-town journalists now have the same employer, so it makes it challenging.
Anyway, he used to appear on KUSI, and he's I think he was with the UT a number of years. We can double-check that. You'd see him almost every week in the Reader. It's the first thing I turn to see what Don Bowder has to say, and Don's in Colorado tonight. So, Don, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you doing?
We're doing great. And I know you've got Wisconsin on, your alma mater. I think they're at halftime, right?
I don't know.
It's about one minute before halftime.
Then I won't miss anything.
Second half will start right at about 7:30, Don, just so you know.
Well, if you want to yell and scream, I know you have the TV. You have the TV on in the background.
No, I'm in my office.
Okay.
So I don't have, it's not on right now.
Okay,
so
good.
I'm giving 100% attention to you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
All right, thanks.
When did you start doing journalism in San Diego, Don? It's been a while.
I came in 1973.
Wow.
I had been with the Business Week magazine for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, before that, I was in advertising and PR for 4 years.
Huh.
And then with Business Week. And then I was with the Union Tribune as financial editor and financial columnist for 30 years and left there in 2003 and started writing for the Reader. So I've been covering San Diego for, something like 41 years.
Wow.
And I'm an old man, obviously. I mean, I'll be 78 in next month, but... I've been doing it for a long time.
But going strong. I bet you have a Rolodex that's second to none, huh? You must have a ton of contacts and people, huh?
Well, Well, yeah, and you know, you get, there's so much you can do online these days, and of course, you still use the telephone, and so I managed to do it. It's you know, and I enjoy it. I'm still enjoying it at my old age, and as long as you're loving it, you might as well keep doing it.
Yeah, right? Well, we love reading your stuff. So I know Richard and I, the main reason we wanted to book you tonight was to talk about this dust-up and snafu and tragedy with our San Diego Opera. And I know you've been a fan and a donor and a subscriber. And so what's your latest take on everything? And then, Richard,
well,
you could jump in on the technical.
I've been... I was on both the board and the advisory board of the opera over 30 years, and was a major donor of Bravissimo something or other, and the thing just obviously broke my heart, and the fact that it came as abruptly as it did, was terrible.
Yeah,
because the staff didn't know, you know, the stagehands didn't know, nobody knew. It
I know,
just came up all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know Ian Campbell was getting interviewed about that, and he said, well, I would go out on stage for the last 3 years. Well, for the folks who haven't, you know, been at every opera, I mean, where was it as far as the press goes? I mean, why didn't where was the press release?
You know, we didn't know.
Yeah.
And
if you don't know,
and,
nobody
you
knows.
You know, most of the board members really didn't know how bad it was, or how bad they're saying it is. And we'll hopefully get into that, because there are things that were not done that should have been done. There were big mistakes that were made by Ian Campbell and his ex-wife, Ann Campbell, who basically dominated the company. And so the board, you know, really didn't know. So now there's a group on the board that is demanding more information, which they haven't got the last time I checked. And there's another group that has organized of board members to save the opera. And then there is a petition going around that has more than 20,000 signatures of people saying, you know, we've got to do this. Now, having said that, you know, my wife and I have been going to operas as long as we've been married, which is 52 years. We love opera. We listen to opera every night, and we you know, listen to DVDs or watch DVDs or listen to CDs. But there is no question that opera, particularly grand opera, is in the early stages of a death spiral. It is going down. It breaks our heart, but it is going down.
But you could do something less than grand opera, right?
Well, yes, and you could do fewer. And one of the questions that I have had, and I've said this in the Reader a number of times, you know, they went down from 5 to 4 operas, and then suddenly they said, okay, we're going to go out of business. Why didn't they go to 2 operas?
Right.
But John, let's back up a second. When when you see nonprofits' assets drop over a 6 or 7 year period from 32 or 33 million to 15 or 16 million, shouldn't that be a clue that there's something going on in terms of a negative trend?
Well, there was something going on, and the attendance was dropping, no question. The attendance started dropping in 2006.
Right, it was before the recession.
Before the onset of the Great Depression, the recession. And it's been going down, and donations have been going down as well. So it's high, and also if you look all around the United States, it's not so bad in Europe, but in the United States, even the Metropolitan Opera in New York is in trouble. And they, you know, opera is dying a slow death. But okay, there are light operas that San Diego Opera has done very well, like Merry Widow and
Pirates
of Fledermaus, and or you could do Gilbert and Sullivan. The Lyric Opera in Chicago is doing Carousel. You know, they're doing, and other opera companies that are doing American musical comedies. And but Ian Campbell would have none of it.
And you could do recitals, too, right? I mean, just with opera.
Well, yes. Recitals is another thing. And then If you go to Baroque opera, although Baroque opera Handel and so on has not done well at the box office in San Diego, to our great despair, because we love Handel operas, but they have not done that well. But you can have recitals. There are operas that are done that have very few characters. Mm-hmm. There are a number of ways that there are savings.
Right.
Plus, you don't always have the top tier singers.
Right.
You can go not only to second tier, but you can go to third tier,
mm-hmm.
and still put on a wonderful opera.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent out there, just like college sports and professional sports. I mean, your second stringers are as good as your first stringers.
Well, an analogy is professional golfers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are probably 100 of them that are absolutely, or maybe 200 of them, that are absolutely superb.
Mm-hmm.
And in any given tournament, somebody, you know, is going to beat Tiger Woods. And, so the third-tier singers in opera are very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so... that's another thing, but Ian Campbell would have nothing of that. I mean, he was bringing in Ferruccio Ferlinetto, who is probably one of the greatest basses going,
mm-hmm.
and he was wonderful. I loved him. I saw him, Boris Godunov, several operas that he did. He was wonderful,
mm-hmm.
but Ian could have brought in less expensive talent.
Gotcha.
And at least tried that.
Yeah.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, attendance has been going down since 06.
Yeah.
That's 8 years.
Yeah, but Don, let's take a break right now. That's good. We'll get into some more of the get into the numbers in a bit. We got a little opera coming up to take us to our commercial break, and we'll talk to you in a minute, okay?
Okay.
Okay, hang on.
Ogni paese è testimon di sue donne sempre.
All right, we are back. How was that for a segue, Mr. Don Bowder?
That's wonderful.
We sing you on and sing you off around here.
Hey, Don, I want to ask about possible solutions, since we all know that the Campbells were overcompensated, and we all know that the amount of rent that the opera paid for the premises was ridiculously high, and all that money's gone. But you sort of touched on one of the possible solutions, bringing in lighter fare, doing less ornate and complicated operas, making it more relevant to the average San Diegan. I've always believed that the San Diego Opera has never been that relevant to the average San Diegan. It's been a very, shall we say, esoteric kind of fare. But I have a couple of other thoughts. I think one of the opera's challenges has been that their board has been very insular and not diverse, and there are certain people on the board that basically support Ian Campbell no matter what he decides, and then the rest of the board seems to sit, well, shall we say, somewhat passively by.
Well, yeah, and really the number of people on that inside group is probably Ian and his ex-wife, Anne Campbell, and then maybe three other people.
Yeah, out of what, a board of 50, board. 50 or 60
people. They were the ones, and they
board.
Kept everything secret, and they were the ones that made the big decisions. And you had a board of 58, which
58, okay.
is entirely too many people.
Yeah, you can't function with 58.
No. And so another thing that happened is that when they were going to take the vote to dissolve the opera, they didn't put it on the agenda.
Huh.
People didn't know. So only 34 people showed up, and they voted 33-1 because they were showing a chart and said, we can't, you know, and they voted. Okay, now they have basically changed. The last vote was 34-5 in the other direction because after all of them realized they hadn't been given information. And as I said earlier, as far as I know, they still haven't been given.
That might have been a violation of their bylaws for all.
Yes, it's a violation,
Of California law, I think.
And it's a violation of state law.
Right. Mm.
And now it could be that they've been given the information now. I don't know. But it was just a couple of days ago they hadn't been. And so there's something wrong. And as you mentioned, a lot of it was Ian Campbell and his wife were overcompensated. Ian Campbell in 2009 told me, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. We're going to all of these problems. But he and his wife combined made $973,000. So then the next year when they started making cuts, they made over $1 million. So they didn't take the hit. Now, the next couple of years, I think they did take a hit. But, you know, they should have been setting the example.
Right.
And they weren't. And that was, and I don't know, it was set by a committee. Their pay was set by a committee. I don't know where that committee was or what it was doing. I don't know where the audit committee was. The audit committee should have been informing the rest of the board how bad things were.
And then labor now has a gripe. They say that they never were consulted. You know, they might be willing to make some concessions to save it.
Sure.
You know?
And, well, sure. Labor could be could make concessions. Mm-hmm. It normally does in the private sector and in nonprofits.
Yeah.
And they should have been consulted. The staff didn't know.
Yeah.
You know that the staff was getting ready to send out brochures for the 2015 season.
Oh, my gosh.
And the same day that they made the announcement, they came in and said, don't send out the brochures to the printer.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, one of the stars must have decided they couldn't come or something like that. But then they find out that the board has voted to suspend operations immediately.
Something smells in Denmark.
But Don, here's the thing that really has interested me about the opera and Ian Campbell. I don't know how old Ian is, but I think he's probably in his mid-60s.
Mid-60s.
Yeah. And a lot of things have changed, obviously, over the years, and the results are now showing. But they've never had, and I would think they should have looked at this 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, there's never been a succession plan in place for new leadership or succession leadership to Mr. and the former Mrs. Campbell.
Yeah,
nobody's been groomed.
No, absolutely true.
Cultivate.
And I don't know how you can expect any entity, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, to continue to prosper and grow unless accommodations are made and plans are made to bring in another generation behind the senior generation.
Right.
And I realize his style of management is such that that probably never would have worked anyway.
Yeah.
But it's beyond belief to me that was just never something that was really ever considered.
It was not something that was considered, and there's still a lot of questions. The chairwoman of the opera is insisting that they will get nothing. If the opera closes, they get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next thing she did was she did an op-ed for the Union Tribune, and she said, well, they have to get in line with the other creditors. So those two statements they're contradictory.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that we've been battling over.
And the thing that puzzles me, they have $15 million in reserve. I think they should spend their last dime on opera. Rather, you know, what's going to happen to that money in reserve, you know?
Well, they have no debt.
Yeah.
So they did not try the very logical things. And as I say, the most logical to me was to drop down to two operas.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully start up again, and then of course do possibly lighter fare. And it's my understanding he didn't want to have anything to do with that. Although one time, now this was probably 20 years ago, he told me in a private conversation he'd like to do a Gilbert and Sullivan,
mm-hmm.
but they never did. They never tried anything like that. So here you guys are both familiar with what goes on in the private sector. You have something that's declining from beginning in 06, and nobody came up with a plan. Nobody addressed this thing and said, you know, what do? We're going downhill.
This is 8 years ago. I mean,
yeah,
that's a lot of time.
8 years ago. I mean,
well, like I said, the assets have been cut in half over that time.
Yeah, right. And so this has been sliding, and they didn't try anything new. And, you know, they stuck with the same old formula. And then all of a sudden, boom, they say, okay, we're going out of business. Well, you know, if you do that in the private sector, you know, you deserve to be hanged, I guess, or something. you just can't let a company, say, go downhill that long without coming up with a new model.
Yeah, it's puzzling to me.
Well, obviously, the most important thing with a potential new model here would be new leadership.
Right.
I'm referring not only to Ian Campbell but
yes,
as well as probably most of the composition of the board.
Right. Right. The there's a lady. This happened just two nights ago or one night ago. Maybe it was last night. There was a lady who did pledge $1 million.
Wow,
and if you
great.
Read between the lines of her statement, she didn't come out saying it overtly, but she was really saying, hey, we need new leadership, just as you say. And I think it's very obvious to everybody when you look back and say, you know, things have been wrong for as long as they have. You know, why didn't anybody on the board say, hey, what are we doing different? What are we doing wrong? What should we be doing?
Well, I think we're answering those questions, Don, and you're shaking them up, and we got to come up on our break here. But we really appreciate you being with us. We hope we can check in with you from time to time because you're a great resource and a great asset for San Diego. So thank you for being with us, and good luck with the Badgers, okay?
Okay, my pleasure.
All right, thanks, Don. Go Badgers.
All right, bye-bye. So we'll be right back right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back in the second half of It's Your Money, the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thanks to all of our sponsors. Obviously, UBS with Mr. Michael Karanta and Drew Freitas. Couldn't do it without you gentlemen. Also, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, San Diego's best CFO company. Carl Sheeler and Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners improve the value of their businesses by doing a better job of understanding the risks that drive those values. Brenda Geiger, estate planning attorney, Geiger Law Office, is specializing in estate planning and asset protection, something the Opera didn't do very well since their assets are now half of what they used to be. But whatever, asset protection is still important. Cost Segregation Initiatives with Joel Grushkin, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Our favorite CPAs, hey you guys, tax season is almost over. Polito Epic CPAs, Don Epic and Paul Polito. Only got about 11 days to go. Sean Puckett, Steve Sefton with Regions Bank, San Diego's best business bank, and located conveniently just across the street from UBS on Prospect in downtown La Jolla. And last but not least, the Lombardi Group and the LG Experience, helping CPAs and wealth advisors do a better job of bringing great value to their very best clients. So thank you to all of our sponsors, and Joe, how can our listeners find out about our amazing roster of sponsors?
Well, they just have to get on their computer or smartphone or whatever device they use to get online, get it over to iymoney.com for It's Your, iymoney.com. Put their cursor over the sponsors tab right across in the top row there, and you'll see a nice drop-down menu with all their names, and you can get all their emails, all their phone numbers, all their background information right there. And I know Richard's had a lot of great success working with all of them for many, many years.
Many years, but be that as it may.
They're all handpicked, and we appreciate their support, and we, in turn, try to do a great job.
And I miss that opera music. I like that.
Well, okay. Well, no.
Maybe you could put some in every show.
No, let's not push it.
It'll be the last opera in San Diego.
I think we should do an opera about saving our opera. You know, but people might go buy tickets for
that.
Hey,
Joe, we got another guest, though. No dilly-dallying around.
Let's not dilly-dally because we have the impressive another journalist in town who's got quite a reputation. You can get any of his papers at any of the close to 400 coffee houses in San Diego. It's one of the old-fashioned, very large papers, and he's the editor and publisher of The Espresso, and his name is John Rippo. So, John, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Joe.
So good to see you again.
Thank you.
Boy, a lot to talk about. I know you mentioned there was an opera about coffee itself, didn't you?
That's right. Shannon Wheeler has written an opera called, I think, Too Much Coffee Man, which is named after his cartoon strip, which it should be at the San Diego Opera. It's a wonderful opera. It's all about the anxieties of modern life, and we're all there.
Have you heard the music? Good music?
We did a story on this, I don't know, 2-3 years ago when it came out and, mm-hmm. and it premiered. It premiered in Seattle.
So there's okay.
It
so.
Went everywhere else but San Diego.
They had no chance here. That's for sure.
Not anymore. No.
Yeah, not right. anymore either.
Well, maybe we should do something about that. So, but anyway, I thought a nice segue from the snafu of the opera to the controversy surrounding the Balboa Park Centennial.
Can we do anything right in San Diego?
just one after the other.
And the Padres lost their fourth in a row, and it's only five games into the season.
Yeah. And they don't have anything to do with the opera either.
No, but they got 8 runs in 5 games. So.
But anyway, talk about having a lot of time. I think this committee was formed, I think around 06 or 05 maybe, right? The Balboa Park Centennial Committee.
Yeah,
and,
I think it was 06.
We're given 2.6 or 2.8 million. I think a million of that came from the TMD, Tourism Marketing
right.
District. And I think the rest must have come from the city budget, right? Our budget.
I think
our public funds.
Right.
And the whole thing's gone sideways. They've dissolved, and now it's back in the city's court. And I think, it's interesting now. There's $2 million more that the TMD is supposed to invest in the centennial events, and now I'm hearing that that may not happen. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, the question is, who's going to invest what in doing what?
Yeah.
And what is going to happen? It's getting kind of down to the wire, and there's not really much to show for it now, is there?
Yeah. So. You would have thought that, I mean, I don't know what exact date is the 100th anniversary of Balboa Park, but say we're going to have one centerpiece event, you know, this is the ribbon cutting or whatever, to celebrate the exact 100th year and have your bands or whatever you're going to do, but no one ever got a vision of that.
No, no.
Well, don't you just buy some balloons and bunting?
Parade the animals from exactly. the zoo. You know.
So I don't know. I mean, and then now we're talking about having the Olympics here. We can't even throw a party for Balboa Park. How are we going to host the Olympics? I mean, that's interesting. But anyway, John, you deal with the coffee house culture. We can get back to this later if we'd like. But you said there's some trends in China. I know the UT did a big story about having some kind of coffee house content in the paper, and I don't know where if that's
well. Yes, so the Union Trib rediscovered the coffee houses and the rise of coffee culture in San Diego, which was a great thing. And they had a talented writer named Roxana Popescu do a piece on that, which was mm-hmm. which was quite good. And she generously quoted me and some thoughts about coffee culture in San Diego, which are positive, and it's going well. It's mm-hmm. going well. It's going to grow. Mm-hmm. There's an entirely new young generation of people out there doing things and making it happen, and the direction is good. Mm-hmm. The direction is very good.
And there's about how many coffee houses in San Diego?
434.
Oh, my.
Independence. Wow. That's not Starbucks.
And tomorrow there's going to be 435 because every day there seems to be one popping up on a corner.
We should be so lucky. We should, you know, San Diego has a million, what is it, a million two?
Something like that.
Yeah, and only 435 independent places. So we could use a lot more of them.
So that doesn't count the chains?
That doesn't count the chains. That's not Starbucks.
Wow.
Now, Starbucks, by the way,
yeah.
closed more outlets in San Diego than any other city in the United States.
Well, that's bizarre. Why do you think that is?
They weren't doing so hot.
I feel another coffee opera coming. Well, some of them are. Obviously, they retain the ones that are doing fairly well. And
actually, not all of them. No,
really?
No. The one in OB is notoriously slow.
Okay.
Slow.
Mm-hmm.
Very slow. And that's because people, the locals don't go there. Or not very many of them go there.
And how about on Adams Avenue, Normal Heights, you've got Lestat's is always packed, and then the Starbucks, which they did do a nice rehab on that building on the opposite the catty corner, but doesn't seem to have the same kind of traffic.
I don't think so. I think they get them in the morning.
Yeah, and Kensington does have a nice spot, though. I mean, there's the building is nice, and
yeah, there's
and the one in Bird Rock is kind of nice too.
Yeah, well, that's true.
As far as you know,
they're pretty.
Look, personally, I don't really like their coffee that much. It's too strong. And Richard doesn't drink coffee
I've
at
never
all.
Tasted coffee in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So I go to coffee houses and buy apple juice.
Or get tea is better for you, probably. Green tea.
Probably.
Yeah, green tea. More caffeine in the green tea.
Well, I don't drink tea either.
Oh, okay. Well,
Oh, that's safe. Right. You don't
drink tea. I don't consume caffeine if I can help it.
Huh.
I've got enough energy without it.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
But so what are some of these trends and developments going on in the coffee culture now that, you may not have seen a few years ago? Anything new?
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of exciting. There are some new small batch roasters in San Diego. Dark Horse is one of them. The Coffee Collective is another. Young people, hands-on kinds of work, doing very, very good work here in San Diego, and very committed to fair trade, shade-grown, organic coffees, first-class coffees in every particular.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are innovative. They're experimental. They're doing a new take on an old trade, and it's paying off for them.
It's kind of like what's going on in the craft brew industry here. I mean,
there are a lot of parallels.
Getting more sophisticated in that regard as well. So, well, now Dark Horse and Coffee Collective. Now, is that the name of the coffee house and the roaster?
Yeah, Dark Horse is on Adams Avenue somewhere, not far from Lestat's, actually, a couple of blocks down from Felton.
A little bit west, okay.
Right, west of
Coffee
of
Collective?
They are on, El Cajon Boulevard between Kansas and 30th Street.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I was in. Is that near the Digital Arts Media Center?
Yeah, right next door to it.
They do a lot of the pour-over coffees, right?
Yeah, that's kind of...
Those are pretty good. I got to put a plug in for Tender Greens, too. I love their coffee.
Right.
They do the... they call it Coyote Coffee, I guess.
Coyote Coffee. I think they get theirs from Virtuoso, yeah. I think.
But that's, folks, that's when they make it by the cup, you know, which is... you're not going to get a much better coffee than that, I don't think.
As fresh as it can be.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very much so. But so you're seeing a greater trend toward the coffee that, you know... With the, not the free trade, do you see more of that now? Or
well, it's finally getting better known. Room. Actually, San Diego was the first city in the United States to adopt itself as a fair trade coffee.
Fair trade, that's what I meant.
Yeah, right. And that was brought about by Karen Sabreros, I think, in 1995, who ran Elan Organic Coffee. She's now the CEO of Inter-American. Still here, still doing wonderful work all these years later. Mm-hmm. And working with Muhammad Yunus at the Grameen Bank to bring about more micro-lending, mainly to women in the rest of the world. And
that's become big business, hasn't it, Richard, the micro-lending?
Oh, it's huge.
I mean, huge. One guy got a Nobel Prize, and now everybody's in the...
Well, it works.
Yeah, crowdsourcing, micro-lending. I mean, it's amazing. It works.
The micro-lending has something like a 93 or 94% repayment rate.
Hmm.
And it gets a lot of people up from poverty elsewhere throughout the world, mostly women, which is what they focus on. They start some very small businesses, which tend to grow rapidly.
Interesting.
And, yeah, it works.
Let's come back with that. We're going to take a break right now. I'll come right back with more. It's Your Money and Your Life right after this.
AM 760. Now, it's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we've had a bonanza of information. How's that for a segue? Tonight, we're back with John Rippo, editor and publisher of The Espresso. And you want to have some concluding thoughts about micro-lending, and then Richard has some information about Boa Park, too. So, but
coffee is changing the world.
Coffee is changing the world, a dollar at a time. And they're raising money out of growing coffee, and they're loaning it out to other people. It'll change economies all over the planet. And you literally get to change the world every time you drink a cup of coffee, if you drink the right coffee. So
do we have a climate here that's conducive to growing coffee?
Actually, you could grow coffee in San Diego.
Is anybody doing it?
Not commercially, no. But the coffee trees that I used to have did wonderfully well here. And in the mountain, the mountain regions would be good for coffee. Mm-hmm. It's within the weather belts of the latitude.
Because you need like near the equator in the mountains or something like
you,
that.
You need elevation. You need elevation, and San Diego is kind of at the northern end of coffee growing climates, but it would work here.
Yeah, interesting. I remember Mrs. Olson talking about that on the commercials. I forget the brand or whatever. But Richard, the Balboa Park.
12/31/14 is officially the start.
1914.
Of the centennial.
1914, so 20.
So we got 8 months. That's plenty of time.
mm-hmm.
We got 2 weeks for the opera, 8 months for the centennial.
So I could see what happened.
We got plenty of time for both.
Mr. Gloria called Mrs. December Knights and said, hey, can you add a little ribbon cutting in the middle of your ceremony
Some
there?
Some balloons.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Anyway, it's a great park. It's too big. I just hope there's something memorable that, happens for the 100th anniversary. We'll see. But
I'll bring some sparklers. Sorry.
Bottle rockets.
Oh, wait, that's illegal.
Maybe you should move SeaWorld to Balboa Park for the year or something.
What did DeMaio do in the fountain? Anyway, I don't know.
You know, Laurie Saldana had a great idea for a celebration of the park, and she wanted to bring all the world's green and modern and forward-thinking technology to Balboa Park for a year display, and to really get people excited about living lives differently and having different things and using energy and everything else.
Well, they're doing that a little bit. I know on top of the Fleet Science Center, it's all solar panels up there, and they have the monitor inside. You can see how much the sun is generating electricity-wise just for that structure. But, you're right, in terms of water and everything else.
Or maybe the opera should do a flash dance, so to speak, just so that we could maybe sort of make this thing relevant to the general population.
But, 100 years ago, Balboa Park Centennial was a coming out party for San Diego. Mm-hmm. It also showcased what the hoped for kind of trades would be.
Well, I guess after the canal, the idea right. was to tout us as a port
right.
For a lot of that commerce coming up the
absolutely,
the,
and it was a showcase to it was a showcase to show the world that would come, and of course that got sidetracked. World War I happened, and mm-hmm. San Diego lost that war. And all the changes that came to San Diego followed, and things went on, but yeah, that concept is still relevant today.
Yeah, well, I was thinking the other day, war really built up our economy here too, in terms of the Air Force and I mean the Navy obviously increased our
yeah.
presence here, and
yes, it did.
Navy flyers and all that, and the aviation. We're the birth of aviation, for God's sake. You know, Most people do not know this, but Lindbergh took off right where the main post office is on Midway. That's where
that's
he
right.
made
that's
his.
Right.
He bought a couple of stamps, and away he went.
He must
Dutch
be,
flats.
He must,
exactly.
He
Dutch
must
flats.
He must be on a stamp. I'm sure.
Yeah, he's on a stamp.
But you mm-hmm. know, little trivia here. Lindbergh flew from obviously New York to Paris. Well, here to St. Louis to New York, and then New York to Paris, but. His average speed was, guess what, Richard?
52.
No, 100 miles an hour. His average altitude was, guess what?
Oh, I don't know, 1,500 feet?
300.
300 feet?
He wanted to be...
Well, there were no high-rises.
He wanted to... Well, over the ocean. He wanted
over
to be low
ocean.
Enough to yeah. see... He was flying by dead reckoning.
By
so
dead
he wanted,
reckoning,
he wanted
right.
to be low enough to see where what the waves were
the
doing.
Waves.
No, he wanted to see what the wind was doing on the waves so he
yeah.
could correct his drift,
yeah.
which is very important.
And that's something.
Very important.
Wow.
And this guy was, you know...
He didn't want to fly to Portugal. He wanted to hit Paris. Yeah. You know, that was
and there is the only flying replica of Spirit of St. Louis that hangs in the lobby of the Air and Space Museum. So if you haven't been down there to see that, you should. Now, John, you wanted to talk about the cross-border coffee culture
yeah.
and how that's developing, because that seems to be getting important.
Well, you know, we found 50 coffee houses out of God only knows how many of them are in TJ, but we found 50 of them, and we're bringing newspapers and everything else to these cafes.
Hmm.
And we found printing houses and theaters and bookstores and all this stuff.
You have to do it in Spanish or English or both?
Both.
Really? Okay.
Both.
Okay.
And there are coffee roasters and wonderful, wonderful little cafes that do things that nobody else does.
Huh, like what?
Well, there's a place called Café Sospeso in Tijuana that roasts its own coffee beans. It has a very pure way of showcasing its coffee. They don't offer any dairy coffee. They offer all these different kinds of beans. You can walk in and order any kind of bean that you want, have it done in a filter cup or a pour over for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place to taste coffee.
In Mexico, you can grow coffee down there, right? I mean,
yeah, yes, they do.
I mean, much,
yeah.
much
they
better.
Grow a lot of things down there.
They
yeah.
grow, yes, yes, they do. But we found places where live theater happens, in, you know, 24/7. We discovered one place with a letterpress over it that prints its own books the old-fashioned way.
Wait a minute, live theater 24/7.
Well, maybe not 24/7. Yeah, you know,
what shows are we talking?
Yeah, I lied.
Okay.
I lied. It wasn't 24/7. But I mean, they
it's
do.
It's constant theater. I'm
yeah,
saying.
constant
theater.
The
season never ends. It just keeps.
The
through.
Season never ends, and okay. there's always something going on. And San Diego's coffee trade has always been unique. The presentation has been unique. It's not like anybody else's trade in the United States, and that's because the public is different here.
God, you know, I saw something the other night where they were using some kind of a blowtorch or whatever to make the heat to coffee. You know, you're right. It is a whole presentation thing down there.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Especially for the high-end kind of...
Yes, it is. And what is happening is the Mexican sensibility is coming here. And that has some important differences between how things work here. I mean, Starbucks is going to be a holdout in San Diego
mm-hmm.
because over time we are going to see a cross-border, binational kind of take on coffee. I mean, it's not going to morph into something completely different, but it'll be its own little. Way of doing things. And it'll be very
you're
interesting.
Right. Instead of your power lunch, let's go have a power coffee. You know,
yeah, it could be.
I like that. That could possibly happen.
There's a chain called De Volada that exists throughout Mexico, but it also has a few outlets here in San Diego, mostly in South Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to see what they do. It's kind of a Mexican take on Starbucks with a lot of significant differences. And many of the little kids who live in Otay Lakes and Chula Vista go there after school, do their homework. I mean, they're processing a new generation all on hot chocolate.
That's great. John Rippo, thank you so much for being guest. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Don Bowder, thanks for calling in from Colorado while watching Wisconsin.
Yes, and his Badgers are up by 3, so go Badgers. And anyway, thank you to Justin Hart, our sound engineer who always makes us sound great. Thanks to Craig Blenke, our account executive. Thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. We appreciate all the good stuff they do for us. And who do you like in the Final Four, Richard, real quick?
Well, I have no clue who's going to win now. You know, how can he vote? I mean, UConn keeps beating everybody.
I'm going UConn, I guess so. Anyway, next week, Larry Doyle, who wrote In Bed with Wall Street, and SEC attorney and whistleblower Gary Aguirre. That'll be a great show. So have a good week, everybody. Good night. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life. IYMoney.com. Good night.